I think this is an annual reminder that we do, that I give every time on this podcast, is we're never as original or as smart as we think we are. When you think James Paxton's good, there's a good chance a lot of other people in your league think that James Paxton is good.
Dawn, here's to us November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I like to prove, we go down tonight.
Hello and welcome to episode 125 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus. Draft season is in full swing. We have Tout Wars coming up this weekend, so it's time for the third annual Flags Fly Forever Auction Strategy Show. Joining me to provide their expert analysis, we have Mike Gianella and Jeff Quinton. For those of you who don't know, or if you're new to the show, Mike is pretty good at this fantasy baseball thing. He won Tout Wars NL in 2015. He's been participating in those leagues for years now, and he was also the co-champion of the 2015 Labor Mixed team with Brett Sayer. So, Mike, how long have you been playing fantasy baseball?
I think longer than you've been alive. My first serious league was an AL only that I joined in 1996, so I've been playing competitively for a little over 20 years now.
Yeah, so Labor and Tout are like the Daytona 500 of fantasy auctions. So Mike knows his stuff. And we have returning to the show, Jeff Quinton. He's also a writer at Baseball Prospectus. He's been covering draft strategy and auction strategy for years. You can find his columns, The Quinton, up at BP. Jeff's been one of my favorite writers for years, since before I was even at the site. So we've done this show together the last 2 years. This year we got Mike joining us as well. So Jeff, welcome back. It's good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Actually, George, you were the first one to have me. I was writing at BP, but it was at your own site where we did. You're the first person. It was my first person to be on a podcast. So thank you for getting me started with that and continuing it once you came aboard at BP.
No problem. Hey, this is literally one of my favorite shows of the year, so real excited to be doing this. And let's dive right into some of the topics. And I want to start off with, I'll throw it out to you first, Mike. We talk a lot about setting yourself up for success on this show. I think the biggest key when you're going into an auction is to have a set of bid limits done ahead of time. I'm amazed every year at how many owners just kind of wing it in these home leagues that I see. It's just amazing to me. So that's the biggest thing, right? To just know ahead of time the value of every player that's going into the draft and how much you're willing to pay for them.
Yeah, the way you put it at the end is the way I'd put it. It's to me, and I know some people are more projection oriented, and that approach is fine, where they say, okay, you know, I believe that, you know, Manny Machado is going to hit 35 home runs, drive in 100, you know, hit 290, and this is what I think it's worth. I look at more like, okay, well, I know, you know, from playing in these leagues what he's worth. I also know what he's going to go for relative to the value in my league. What's my price? Like, what do I want to pay for him? Now, the bid limits I publish look very strict, but to me, and I recommend this to people as well, they should really be a guideline. They should be like, okay, so my bid on Machado is 35. You know, I'm going to stop at 33 because, you know, I have a third baseman frozen in a keeper league, or, you know, I suspect that I can get a bargain later, or I'm going to go 37 because I don't really know how usually, but more like, you know, 36 is like, well, you know, I really need Machado for my strategy, or, you know, I really want to get him for whatever reason. But yes, generally speaking, like, what you don't want to do is you don't want to say, well, my price on Machado is 35 and I'm going to go 40 because I'm really excited and I have to get him. And, you know, if I don't get him, I'm going to be very sad. And you're right. A lot of people, even some experts, do that. And that really surprises me.
Jeff, for yep. you, is that the biggest thing?
Yeah, I think being able to look at, I think the one of the big mistakes people make, or it's not a mistake necessarily, but with an auction, you can put in, or a draft, you put in as much effort as you want or as little as you want. So that's really a personal decision, how much enjoyment you want to get out of it. But as far as if you want to do as well as possible, taking the effort to take a look at not just, you know, here's the list of players. Oh, I like that guy. Oh, I like that guy. Oh, I don't like that guy. You know, starring certain guys is a very common practice. The issue that you get with that is that what you end up being subject to is your own biases about whether, you know, you've been burned by a guy in the past or a guy's done really well for you in the past. It feels safer and you might go beyond that. And that's what I think Mike was talking about, or what he alluded to when he said, hey, this guy, I think he can hit 35 home runs. I think he can hit 280, or I think he can steal X amount of bases. I think that what we get confused a lot about is for those productions are just a means to an end. It's worth something in fantasy baseball. And it's going to depend on your league, if it's a traditional 5x5 or anything else. And you really have to be able, if you want to get as much value, if you want to get the best odds of winning at the end of your auction, is you need to understand what all those different production equates to in value in your draft. So that way you can say, okay, you know, you're seeing that, you know, the top speed guys are going for well beyond what they could probably, or what they're likely to produce, because teams think, oh, steals are so scarce. So you can walk that, but you have to be able to know what that is relative to all the other production, as opposed to, I want to get one of these three guys. So you go, you know, as Mike was saying, $5 above your limit, so to speak. So I think the advantage of taking what Mike's, you know, auction values, which are to me the most helpful tool in off-season preparation, and then you're really seeing not just, you know, certain guys, but what the whole field looks like. And that way it's not so scary to be like, oh, I missed out on these three closers, the other closers stink. You know that, yeah, this guy might not be as great, but he's still going to produce 80% of whatever the other guy is going to produce, and you're able to get him at, you know, 50% of the price, let's say.
Mike, since we're kind of on that subject and Jeff just kind of brought it up, when are you comfortable pushing a little bit on a player that you do like? We kind of just briefly hit on it there, but how much you have your bid limits, but are there any instances where you believe it's fair to go even above that a little bit, or is that a mistake to do that?
It's usually a mistake, and, you know, Jeff hit the nail on the head, which is, when you set these, and particularly in an auction, and particularly when it's a fast-paced auction, this is when, you know, we see this in CBS, and you were in CBS for the first time, George, this year, and you saw it happen to a lot of people. I think it might happen to you, too. We get caught up in the moment. We get swept up in the excitement. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, the auctions are very exciting. Like, it's this moment where you're like, wow, I can really, you know, drafts are exciting too, but auctions, like, wow, I can really set the tone here and buy a player and get the guy I want. You know, the problem is in the calm beforehand, when you're sitting at home and you're, you know, whether it's my bids, whether it's Pakoda, whether it's someone else's method, and however you devise this, that's when you're making better decisions. You know, Jeff talks all the time about, you know, kind of why we make our decisions, and, you know, I'll let Jeff speak to it because he does a better job with it than I do, and he's more, or at least he comes across as more erudite than I do in a setting like this. But there's something to it, which is we all make these decisions in the moment that we kind of throw out, like when, you know, we're playing a game, which is what fantasy baseball is. You know, get back to your question. I tend not to do it at the very beginning of an auction. I treat auctions the way I treat drafts, where the first half of my auction, maybe a little bit deeper in, I'm looking at value, and it's at the end where it's, or the middle toward the end, where it's like, okay, well, you know, it looks like I have my power, but I'm a little light on speed, so I'm going to go over a dollar or two on my bid to get the speed I need or to get the starting pitcher I need. That's kind of where that comes in. But even then, notice I said a dollar or two. Right. I still like to have that discipline. I don't like to be in a position where I take all the work I did for the first hour or two of the auction and say, all right, I want to go five over. I mean, it happens sometimes. but you really want to avoid that if you can.
Right. I only like to do it on truly elite players. Like, a good example would be like a Jose Altuve. If my bid limit's 45 and I can get him for 46, like, I, you know, maybe. Jeff, you touched on it earlier, but what's maybe the biggest mistake we make in an auction?
Well, and in an auction, I think the big one is we have an idea. We're doing all this preparation. We're excited. We're reading all these lists about these players, and Jose Altuve is not only the best, but, you know, these are these, you know, these cool analyses that people at BP, you know, much smarter than me, have done to find out about his swing changes or anything else that could happen, right? And we're just craving baseball. And as a result, we come up with all these, you know, some of these values, but you go into an auction knowing, hey, it would be really fun to have, or I would really love to have Jose Altuve on my team, for example. But what we don't do, which we should really do, is, like you said, your bid limit's 45, but you might be willing to push it to 46. What I've been trying to do the last couple of years in my auctions is, well, make it what I think it should be. So come the auction, like the day of the auction, I want my values to reflect all of that. So if I think, you know what, Jose Altuve is really actually worth 46, I'll put 46 in my, you know, in my spreadsheet, and that way it's not a, and that way I can trust it. Because come the day of the auction, like Mike was saying, is it's easy to get amped up or to get carried away. And so what you need to trust is that the person that put those numbers in your spreadsheet was a better decision maker than the person sitting there, you know, around the table or around the computer on your draft or auction day when you're all excited.
Just to build on that, I mean, Altuve at Labor was a great example. So if you read, by the time this comes out, you'll be able to see. Actually, it's online already. So I wanted Altuve in Labor, and I identified the fact that he earns more than people give him credit for. Usually Mike Trout goes for more. And I think I was going to go to 41 or 42 on him, even though my bid was 41. And he sailed up to 45. And even when he got to 43 or 44, I'm like, you know what? I'm out. And that is a thing, to Jeff's point, I often see people do, which is they say, I have to have a guy as a linchpin of my strategy. It's a little bit different in keeper leagues because, you know, there's guys are taken off the board. There's inflation. There's a lot of different reasons. You know, there's less speed. There's less average. There's less players at position. But in a redraft in the first round, I feel like there's almost no reason to go $4 or $5 over your price for a player just because there's so much talent out there. You know, and another point, maybe we're going to get to this, George. So, Jeff, you saw what I did in Labor this year, I assume, and you've seen me do this in auctions where I tend to spread the wealth. And some people get really turned off by that, and they're like, oh, like, how can you do that? Like, you didn't spend over $23 on a hitter. And my attitude is, well, look at the team I bought. Like, it's a good team, and the best part about it is that, you know, I can have one or two guys fail, and it's still going to be a good team because I packed all this value on the team. So I think that's sometimes what people miss when they go after the superstars, which is, well, they're fun to get. But in an only in particular, now mix is different and we can get into this, but in an only in particular, you kind of have to be careful about like packing a guy like Altuve. You know, I think in CBS, those guys all went for like 46. It was Altuve and Machado and Betts. You know, you're talking about close to 20% of your value in a player, you know, particularly a guy who doesn't run. I think it was in Machado, where you're like, well, you know, at this point, you're packing so much of a loss onto your team that you're putting yourself at a disadvantage.
Yep, and I think it's a really important point that, and it's kind of been the biggest point that I've been trying to talk about this off season. So, past off seasons, I probably have focused more on our individual decisions, the biases that go into, you know, why you might devalue a guy you've been burned by or overvalue a guy that you've drafted in other leagues because you feel like it confirms your decisions to some extent. But this year, it's been a lot of what I notice is people still make those mistakes even when they know that they're mistakes. And it's because of what Mike just said is people get turned off by a team looking a certain way. They think that a certain type of team or a certain number of things has to happen for a team to win. And I think that's where we can really get the most value in drafts or auctions is to be the person that is confident in knowing that if you keep getting players at or below their price relative to the room, whereas everyone else is overpaying for players, you're going to be the person collecting the best players either early in the draft because people are being too conservative, or you'll be the best players, or you're only the person collecting the best values throughout the rest of the draft because everyone's spent too much of their money. And I think that's where, you know, it's easy to say, yeah, you know, go a few dollars over on a guy. And that was even, or even if it's, I've been in leagues where it's, you know, people overspend in the beginning. So you start to bring your bids down because you're expecting values. And then, but a guy hits your price that you like, so you spend on him. For me last year, that was Matt Carpenter. I bought him at my price. But as a result of spending that, I couldn't afford a DJ LeMahieu who went $7 below my price, who I would have loved to have. So, and that's in a keeper league too, so I really kicked myself. But yeah, that's where it's important is you have to say, any type of team can win as long as it's a team with the best players.
So that's maybe the biggest takeaway from what we've talked about so far, that you have to be willing to trust your valuations and your bid limits and to sort of check yourself, like you talked about, you know, when I get to my bid limit or close to it, stop bidding. Do not resist the urge to go above and beyond that, as fun as it would be to roster a certain player. I found that over the last couple of years, that's something I've gotten better at. I no longer give in to that temptation to be like, well, the hell with it, I'm just going to go to 25 here on Christian Yelich or something like that. That's definitely part of it.
George, I just want to chime in because that's a really good point. And I think it's because you probably, how long have you been doing auctions for now?
This is like at least 5 years now of, you know.
Right. So that's probably consistent. Where I'm at about now as well. And it is amazing how much you're more confident in your limits because you've seen things happen, right? You know that, hey, and Mike, you know, he's been doing it for a long time, and that's why he's confident waiting a lot of the times when people overspend, is that a lot of people don't trust that it's all going to be, that there's going to be these, even though mathematically it has to be, if people are overspending, it has to be that there's going to be values later. You still don't trust it. You're still afraid, like, my team isn't, I've never seen a team punt saves and win. I've never seen a team with no, it's no top, you know, without paying top price for some hit or win. But the more you do it, the more likely you are to come across it. And I think that's how, you know, not everyone can, you can't just get that experience, but if you can trust people who've been doing it for a while, that's where you can learn to say, that's probably the right process.
So 2 points. I mean, one, it took me, in terms of making bids and being comfortable with them, it took me probably almost like 8 years or so to get to that point. Now, this is before I was at BP. I mean, but so it is a process to get to that point when you're doing your own work. Like before, I was relying on Alex Patton for a while who did this and just using his bids. And then, you know, after a few years, I was like, well, you know, I can tweak these and make them better. You know, and I say this to readers all the time, which is, you know, and I'm sure Jeff does this, you know, if you can tweak those bids to your league and to your preferences and what you believe, that's great. I want you to do that. You know, I don't want you, you know, if you have to use my bid limits and you're not comfortable, you know, doing, you know, going on your own, that's fine. But I don't want people to feel like, well, you know, this is gospel. You know, if Mike says that Paul Goldschmidt's worth 39, and I like him a little less, and I like Chris Bryant better, I can't, you know, flip them. That's nonsense. Like, if you believe that for, you know, a good analytical reason, do it. The second thing, kind of get back to your question again, George, about, like, stopping points. I mean, there is a point, you know, there's a couple things in auctions where I'm a little careful. And one of them is, so years ago, to give an example, I was in the CBS Expert League, and I think I spent close to $100 on my pitching staff right out of the gate. And I got Joe Mauer back when, like, Joe Mauer, this is an ale only. So I got Joe Mauer back, and Joe Mauer was like the catching god for like 24. So I had all these pitchers in Joe Mauer, and I had no hitting. And I kind of realized, I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, I could keep just going for bargains here and spend like 130, 140 on pitching, but I'm going to have to put the brakes on. Like, I'm pretty much going to have to stop and buy hitting and let the bargains go. What wound up happening was, you know, Jeff, you reminded me of this. I wound up with this weird team that had, like, it was stars and scrubs on offense. I also got Victor Martinez at catcher, so I had, like, most of my hitting or a lot of my hitting in catcher. I only had Rivera as the closer, you know, and I got all these reactions at the blog I was running back then, which were like, you know, Mike, you know, yeah, your pitching's great, but from all you spent, you have one closer, you don't have enough offense to set the other. But I wound up winning the league going away, in part because I was able to trade for the second closer, like, in – I think it was Joe Nathan back when he was also good, and I was able to like kind of maneuver. And it's always this idea of Jeff's absolutely right. Like there are extremes. Like you don't want to buy five closers if that's where the value is taking you. You know, you don't want to, you know, spend $180 on your pitching staff. You do want to have some rational limits. But you also don't have to necessarily get locked into this idea of, well, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do this. You can make almost anything work. And if your values or your bids are strong and your foundation or your methodology is good, it'll go a long way.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's really important to try and instill that mindset of here's my limit, I'm going to stop there. Like a great example is like James Paxton this year. We talk about him all off season, how much we all like him. And if it gets to the point in the draft where he's above my price, I just have to stop myself. Just be like, as much as I love James Paxton, I'm not going to get him. You know, I'd be spending too much. So, yeah, I think that's a huge takeaway. Jeff, what's one of the biggest biases that you see? What's one of the most common ones among fantasy owners as it relates to an auction? Because there's a few, right?
There's a ton. I think the first one I'll talk about, just going off what you talked about with James Paxton, about how, you know, you really liked him. He's kind of he hasn't broken out in fantasy yet, so, you know, some people can consider him a sleeper of sorts. But the thing is, and I think this is an annual reminder that I give every time on this podcast, is every time we're never as original or as smart as we think we are. So when you think James Paxton's good, there's a good chance a lot of other people in your league think that James Paxton is good. Maybe not, but there's a very large percent chance that there is. And as a result, you're probably not the high guy on James Paxton. It's a wisdom of the crowds kind of thing. That's a very small crowd, so not necessarily that indicative. Right. But the highest person on any given player, when everyone is super into a player or super has paid a lot of attention to a player throughout an auction, is probably not going to be a great value. It'll probably be overvalued. And the same thing extends beyond that just to overall strategies. If you're looking at, you're going into, let's say, a keeper auction, for example, and there's only two closers available, everyone's probably thinking, especially teams that only have one or no closers, I got to go get this closer. Well, then it becomes a less viable strategy because that guy's going to be really expensive. Or if, you know, I think there was a year when punting saves was really in vogue, and I forget which experts league it was. It was like four teams or three teams of 12 that punted saves. And at that point, you know, saves become a bargain because you're not getting the advantage of being the only team that punts saves. So I think that's the big one. I think the other two biggest ones that we see are there's an idea called advocacy, the advocacy effect, which is that the more you advocate for something, the stronger your beliefs become about it. So whether or not you actually believe it or not. So, like, if you work for a company for long enough, lots of times, you know, you end up using their products more, even though the only reason you use their product is because it's top of mind. And then you're telling your family to use it, and, like, you would have never told anyone to use it before, and now all of a sudden you're really into it. Well, the same thing happens in, and then it's similar to, like, something you're always defending. You know, if you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend that you're always defending, the more you're defending it, you're making cases for it. And in your mind, you always want to be logical. And so we make this logic fit. You make all those arguments fit. And instead of saying, oh, yeah, everyone else is right, you say, oh, you know, well, my opinion is stronger and stronger. And we do that with baseball players. And that's why when you do, you know, three or four options, that generally, if you're not paying attention, you're going to end up with the same person in, you know, in every single league. And lots of times what we end up doing is we pay a higher and higher premium for them across the leagues, or what we end up doing is we end up, you know, searching for them kind of, oh, can you believe what a great deal they were compared to this other auction, which is irrelevant. All that should matter is that the best decision to make at the time, but our decisions aren't islands. That's not how we work. We always want to remain pure logical, and so that would be my big takeaway, too, is make sure you're not taking someone just to make yourself feel better about a previous decision.
Yeah, but what I tend to do if I'm higher or lower on a player, and you know, particularly like I have Alcides Escobar in a couple leagues, but that's just because, you know, he's even an AL only, he's not highly regarded, and you know, he just kind of swoops in as a bargain. But if in a situation where I'm higher than the crowd. And I agree with you, Jeff. I think what a lot of people do, if they're higher on the crowd than a player is and they start getting him in all their drafts, and I've seen experts do this too, instead of questioning it, they say, oh, you know, like other people aren't as smart as I am. And, you know, they don't come out and say that, but that's essentially what the message you get. I do the opposite. I start researching the player and questioning my biases and being like, well, why was I so into this player in the first place? Why was I so excited about him? And sometimes I'll move my price down and be like, you know what? Actually, usually I move my price down by, like, say, a buck or two. I remember the guy down, like, half a round or so. Cause it's not even that I was wrong. It's like, well, I'm still high on this guy, but I'm not necessarily – I'm kind of seeing what people are saying. But sometimes I stick to my guns. Like, Lucas Duda 2 years ago was a guy I got pretty much everywhere, and I looked at him and I looked at him, and I was like, you know what? I see a value opportunity here because people don't like him. They don't like, you know, the way he looks. They don't like his physicality. They don't think much of him from a scouting perspective. And I see the fantasy value. I'm going to take an advantage. So, you know, that opportunity to investigate can go both ways. But to Jeff's point, you definitely should investigate your biases. You should not just accept the belief that, like, well, I'm right, you're wrong. You know, and really, if you're an expert or if you're, you know, even if you don't write for BP and you've played a long time, it's very easy to get stuck in that trap and say, you know what, I know what I'm doing, and therefore everybody else is wrong.
Yeah, and Jeff made a really great point when he right at the top of this conversation about bias when he said, you know, you're not as smart as you think you are. You know, if you feel a certain way about a player or a strategy or an approach, there's a good chance someone else in your league does as well. So I just think we need to take that into account as well. So we're talking auction strategy with Mike Gianella and Jeff Quinton of BP. Let's go to some Twitter questions really quick, because we did get some interesting ones and they relate to some of the stuff we brought up already. The first one's from Scott. It's at Zach Daniel SSR. He wants to know how you deal with inflation in dynasty leagues. So this is maybe a good question for you, Mike, since you do a lot more of this from the valuation and bid limit standpoint. So how should we deal with inflation in dynasty leagues?
Well, I don't play as much Dynasty as I play standard Roto, but I did join an odd new league this year, and I have been exposed more to Dynasty thanks to, you know, Brett and you and all the guys who are in TDGX. My thing about inflation, and honestly, Jeff could probably tackle this too. So inflation, while it certainly matters, it's easy to kind of get wrapped up, you know, too much in it and get too obsessed and worry too much about, you know, how it's going to impact my team. What in a league like Otnu, you know, I don't know what kind of the budget is, but you kind of want to be careful in Dynasty where there's a lot of players with really low salaries of not simply applying the inflation in a linear way. And what I mean by that is what winds up happening is, you know, in a league with say 30-40% inflation, the guys at the top tend to go for so much money that they wind up blowing your entire budget. And it's very easy to fall into a trap where you get two or three guys under inflation who are still very expensive and think you're going to be okay. And then the people behind you just kind of wait and swoop in the middle and get a lot of players, you know, at even more bargains. So the higher the inflation, the more variance is created. You know, Jeff was talking a little bit about, you know, variance in opinions. You know, that variance and high inflation creates even more of that. So that's one thing I'm kind of careful about in a situation like that. The other thing I'd say about Dynasty, I know Brett's talked about this, is as important as young players are, you don't really want to suck the value out of them by applying too much value to them, because they're still unpredictable commodities with the exception of like a few of the top guys. And most of those guys are keeps anyway in a Dynasty format. So that's where you want to be careful in Dynasty Keeper. You don't just want to sit there and say, okay, well, I'm going to pay big money for all these rookies. And it's true in a draft format too, because if you do that, you know, you just wind up in a situation where you wind up with a bunch of overpriced commodities. And even if your guy hits, you know, you've just got a rookie at par.
Yeah. So we got a really good inflation auction strategy question from Dan Gracie at the Gracie. Jeff, he wants to know, assume that most of these teams, he says, keeper auctions assume good decisions for keepers and inflation. How do you auction when the best values on the board are probably already gone? It's a tough one.
So yeah, and this is probably the lead. This is probably what I play most is I have two, an NL only and an NL only keeper auction league. So there is inflation in both leagues because you know the people are keeping players that are the most valuable. And the first thing I want to touch on is what you're keeping. And the decision that I see most people make is, all right, you know, you take all the players that are being kept, and they're being kept X amount under value, right? So compared to, let's say it's an exact 12-team AL-only league, so you can use exactly Mike's bid limits because it's the exact same setup. But the players being kept are, I don't know, $100 cheaper than their actual bid limits. So from there you say, okay, now this is what all the remaining players would then be available for, you know, we have to tack on that saved money is what's going to be placed on all the remaining players, right? So you go into the draft then applying that. Now how you're going to apply that additional monies, that becomes an interesting part, and it takes a little bit of knowledge about the players and the league. So if the league has a very easy, it depends on really replacement level. So if the shallower the league, the more replaceable the player, the more I tend to put those values on the best players, or, you know, the top player I might inflate by, you know, I don't do it linearly. I don't say, all right, I'll take every player and tack on a dollar that's in the pool. I say, you know, the best, I try to do it percentage wise. So, which I guess maybe is linearly, but it's, you know, the top players that are like a Kershaw might get, you know, $6 of inflation, whereas a guy that's, you know, $3 might only get $1 of inflation, let's say. And then first of all, you want to take that into account with your actual keeper decision. So once you project that all out, you could then say, oh, this guy, really, I think he's worth, you know, even though I only have Francisco Liriano, even though I only have an $8 value on him in the auction, he's going to go for, I value him at 12. So if I have him at 10, I'd want to keep him. But then the other side of that too is when you're going into the auction is it's easy to think, wow, these prices are getting out of hand because of what, you know, like a non-inflation limit is because it feels safer. But what you really want to do is you, once you do that calculation, trust it initially because you don't want to miss out on those initial players. I see that a lot. The top players on the board sometimes, if people aren't calculating inflation correctly, actually are the biggest bargains. Being able to get Paul Goldschmidt at 40 when inflation probably should put him at 44. And at the same time, you can't just assume that your inflation, or you shouldn't assume that your inflation calculation is correct. You want to go back, you want to be rechecking and say, just to make sure you didn't miss something, because I've been there too, where I thought inflation was going to be higher on a certain group of players, and it was lower, and I didn't react accordingly, and as a result, you end up with, you know, a lot of money left over, and you're paying more because you didn't go back and check your assumptions.
Yeah, so the last Twitter question we got, Mike, is from Matt Olson at MOLS10. He wants to know, nominate bottom dollar guys when you plan for the end game. Be aggressive on guys you value more than ADP. So I guess I'll start with the end gamers question because we get this a lot when we talk auction strategy and we get lots of questions about it, but how do you handle nominating a player you like that you think is a player who'll go for a couple of bucks, like we're talking below $5. Should you try and throw out a player like that early or wait till later? Because it's kind of like a double-edged sword thing where if you throw him out early, there's a chance he might go for a couple bucks more and you miss out on him. Or if you wait till the end, someone's left with a bunch of money and they take him from you then. So how do you handle throwing out players that you value for those low dollars that you're trying to get at that price?
Well, throwing them out early is generally a bad idea because, and this is particularly true in a redraft, there's all this money on the board And I mean, there's a couple examples, you know. So if you've got a guy that you've got valued at, say, seven, you know, and you throw him out for one, you know, you might sneak him in for two or three. But early on is when everybody's spending their money. And I've noticed that ploy usually has the opposite effect, where people tend to overbid those guys. And I do agree, at the end, it's kind of tough, and it's a matter of roster management and how people are, things are shaking out. And there's always that risk that you might be out of money or in dollar derby. Although hopefully if you did that, that means you had a good auction, you have a lot of value on your team. What I tend to try to do is throw those guys out toward the middle end. You know, what I mean by that is not quite in the dollar days or a little bit over that, but kind of when everybody's like got $40 or $50 left, they're really focused on their needs specifically. And that might be when I'm looking at the board. And this is really what's important. I think more than the timing, it's when you have to look at the board and who needs what and be like, okay, well, the three teams that have money don't need a catcher, and there's this one guy, you know, this $1 catcher I kind of like, who I think is worth five or six, and I can sneak him in now. That's really where it's not so much the when as the how. You have to kind of look at what your opponents are doing. You know, another tactic I like here, I mean, kind of you see it in drafts, but in auctions even more effective. You see three starting pitchers in a row go out, and people are kind of excited about them. That's kind of when you throw out a low level corner and you're like, all right, well, maybe I won't get this guy, but the room's been spending this money on pitching or has been geared toward pitching. I'm going to go for this guy here. Maybe it doesn't work. You know, and this ties back to our general conversation. The one thing about this kind of strategy, you just can't be too tied into the idea that you're going to get a guy for a dollar or two. But if you're doing this, you know, if you're kind of making this play, like I said, the middle end is where I like to do it. When I'd say teams have anywhere from like $30 to $50 left and they're focused more on their needs and the holes they need to fill as opposed to getting a bargain.
So, Jeff, do you agree with that? What's your strategy for sort of low-dollar players? And also the second part of that question, how do you plan for players that you think you value more than the consensus going into an auction?
So, for the first question, yeah, I agree with Mike. I think there's I actually wrote an article, I think a couple years ago, called Nominating with Intention, which goes over a lot of this. I agree with Mike, throwing out those guys you think are going to be bargains early so you can like lock in a bargain. That goes back to the whole, I think I have this brilliant idea that no one else thinks they have, and then the guy that you thought was a bargain ended up going, everyone thought was a bargain, and they end up going for $3 more than you wanted them. And you don't get them, or you pay so much that they're no longer a bargain. What I like to do as far as from nominate, and the other thing too is if you're always throwing out the best guy, which is usually a pretty sound tactic because that the best player left on the board is usually the best way to get everyone else's money out. If you're always throwing out the best guy and then all of a sudden you throw out a guy that's not the best guy, probably, you know, not everyone's paying attention, but someone's going to pay attention and be like, hey, this person's throwing him out because he wants that guy. So I do try to, you know, throw out players that will get out the most money, but I do try to mix it up so that way, at least in the beginning, maybe a few guys I think that I might end up with, you know, not that I'm super tied to them, but so that way, you know, if you have that kind of mix that people can't put you on a hand, so to speak, kind of like in poker, you always being aggressive helps in that, you know, people never know exactly what you have, and that way at the end of the auction, people are less likely to be able to say, oh yeah, he wants this guy or he doesn't. And that's when, you know, once people have probably overspent that mid-back of the auction that Mike's talking about, you might be able to pick up some values. As far as way late, you know, that last round and everyone's got a few dollars left as far as throwing out who you want or who you don't, I tend to like to throw out for a dollar. I like to, unless I really have it counted right, like I know I'm going to be the one who ends up with, you know, the $1. Chris Owings was the guy for me last year, and an animal only. Unless it's like you really have it all counted out, I do like to throw out some of the guys that I do like, because we have this idea too, come that time where we start to get a little paranoid, where we say everyone's thinking what I'm thinking, but that's, we call it the focusing illusion, that you're nothing's as important. I think it was like, I'll butcher it. It said something like, nothing's as important as it is when you're thinking about it. And so other people are thinking about other things, and they're thinking about a whole bunch of other things. So there's, and they're probably mentally drained by the end of an auction. And at that point, you know, throwing out your guy, I think it increases your chances of getting him, as opposed to throwing out a guy you don't want that you might get stuck with. As far as how you value players that you like more than ADP.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, like, those are the guys you're going to think you're interested in. Those are the guys that you've been reading about all off season that are just a little better than you think. But the thing with ADP that's dangerous is I like to use ADP because it's a good indicator of what trends people are over or underrating. So a lot of times it's people are underrating, you know, for what I saw this year and last year was that people underrate modest amounts of speed. So like a guy who steals 5 to 10 bases, it's not going to make or break, but it is a lot more valuable than a guy who's only likely to steal 2 bases. And that kind of trend I see, you know, we saw like DJ LeMahieu and Dustin Pedroia get underrated because they're not super fantastic in any category besides average, which people probably underrate too. So I like to use ADP as a trend analysis, but for your individual leagues, ADP probably doesn't matter as much because you're not picking against ADP. This isn't a like a daily where you're picking against a set value compared to everyone else. You're actually competing head to head. You're making decisions against other people. So as much as I like to be informed by it, what ends up happening is a lot of people are, again, seeing the same thing. So that's why I think it's important to pour over, you know, make your adjustments for your specific league, and really take a look at your values in whole. That's why I like to have, like, all the players in front of me with their values. So that way when it's easy to get locked in on a single player and say, and then all of a sudden you start tacking on an extra dollar, an extra dollar, an extra dollar, and now all of a sudden, you know, you got D. Gordon for $33 or something, and it's, you know, way more than what's realistic given the risk or whatever, you know, whatever the example might be. To really say, always be looking at whatever player you're looking at, kind of what Mike was talking about earlier, when he's high on a guy versus the industry. Mm. I want to look at him versus the list, versus all the other things, versus the opportunity cost, what else I could be spending him on. And then you say, yeah, you know what? Yeah, he's great, and I like him as a baseball player, but there's these other three guys that I also like as baseball players. I just haven't been thinking about them as much. And to spend an extra $4 on this guy compared to these other guys is because I read a few articles on them probably isn't a great decision.
Yeah, so thank you to everybody who sent in Twitter questions. They were really good this week, so keep doing that when we send out the bat signal. Jeff brought up something interesting, nominating with intent, Mike, and for me, that always the alarm bells go off in my head because one of my biggest pet peeves with auctions is the throw out guys to get money that I don't want to get money off the table. I'm not a big fan of that strategy because I want to use my nomination for a strategic gain to nominate a player I'm interested in buying most of the time. You know, there are obviously occasions like Jeff said where you want to mix it up so you keep people on their toes every now and then. But I consistently want to be throwing players out that I want to get, right?
You know, it's funny, Larry Schechter, you know, of Winning Fantasy Baseball, you know, we all know who he is. You know, he wrote about this in his book. Like, he agrees with that approach. And you know, he says in the first round in particular, like, it's a mistake in the first round to throw out a player you don't want. And it's kind of that idea of like he threw out Altuve in labor earlier this month, and he didn't get him. But he's like, well, you know, I'm either going to get a guy I want, you know, at my price, or I'm not. But you know, with Jose Altuve, there's no secret. It's not like waiting on Altuve 5 or 6 players is going to change anything. If it changes anything, you might wind up with a player earlier that you don't like as much, and you're like, well, why didn't I just throw out Altuve and resolve this, you know, situation earlier? So yeah, there's that standpoint. You know, the one time I throw out players that I don't want, like CBS is a good example. If I see an auction where the prices are just all too high, that's a case where it's like, you know what, I'm just going to throw somebody out because I to continue, you know, this situation where people are overspending, because I know it's not going to be another round or two until I pounce. So I do generally agree with throwing players out that you want, and the idea that throwing out players that you don't want is very overrated as a strategy. But there are times where, you know, like anything else, you know, I'm sure Jeff would agree with this, you know, there's times where it's optimal to do that, to be like, well, look, you know, I see what's happening here. It just doesn't make sense for me. You know, another good situation in a keeper league, if I see an opponent who has like a strong freeze list is going to spend a lot of money on a closer, that's the one commodity he needs, and there's like a limited amount of closers available, I like to throw that closer out there. I like to kind of go after that guy in that situation. Like, you know what? I know you need this thing. I'm going to make you pay for it early and put you in a position where I have more resources in terms of auction dollars than you do. So yeah, generally I tend to, I like to throw out guys I want, but there are situations where it's optimal not to do so.
That's a good point.
I just wanted to comment on that really quickly.
Yeah.
Because, and I think one of the biggest things that we talk about, and it's a funny thing, is like, we're talking about throwing out players we want versus we don't want. And in an auction, right, like almost any player I want at a price and almost any player I don't want at another price. Like, it's,
yeah.
Like, I don't want Dustin Pedroia at 26, but I want Dustin Pedroia at 10. Like, you know what I mean? So that's where I think it gets complicated, as far as I try not to even think of it like that. When I'm talking about nominating with intention, I'm saying, looking at the room, and kind of what Mike's saying about the closer is, I think, and you're not going to be right with your your hypothesis every time, but I'm hypothesizing that,
well,
because closers are so scarce, if I throw it out, it's going to go way over, and someone's going to spend way too much money on them, and that's something you want. So, like, yeah, you want to put players on the table that you can get because you want to add them to your team. But all those players are going to be bid on, are going to come out at some point, regardless of who throws them out. And you throwing them out, I don't necessarily think makes them more likely for you to get them, unless you think that the room is going to be light on them. And if that's the case, then yeah. But you, at the same time, I just heard you
that,
to be willing to say, all right, I'm throwing them out, but if it's over my price, I'm walking away.
That's a really good point. And, you know, to give an example from labor, so, and I absolutely, my thing about throwing out a player, any player you throw out should be someone at the right price you want to buy. Like, when I say throw out a player, you know, you think is going to go for a high price. So Masahiro Tanaka, I threw him out, I think, in the fourth or fifth round after I'd bought Rick Porcello and Jay Happ. And the thinking was, well, you know, he's going to go over, I have two pitchers, he's going to go over the price I want to pay. And, you know, honestly, I wanted to regroup and kind of, you know, wait to see what happened. I got him for 17. I didn't get him for 17, and this is a mistake I see people make. I see people price enforce, to use your term, Jeff, without intent. We're like, well, you know, pitching's going for a lot of money. I'm going to make people spend more on pitching. They wind up with the pitcher that they don't, or a hitter, whoever they don't want. In this case, I got Tanaka. I'm like, all right, well, this is a guy at price for me, and actually was one of the better bargains, in my opinion, on the day.
Like, one of the best bargains that whole auction.
Yeah, and right. I mean, I appreciate that. But basically, I mean, that's kind of what it is, where you have to have an auction where every player you're ready to buy. This would be my takeaway for auctions. Every player, there's a price. And there has to be a point where you're either willing to walk away or say, yeah, I'm buying this guy. I had no plan to buy this guy at the beginning of the day, but I just can't pass up this price based on everything I came up with. And that is probably the biggest mistake I see. I see people, you know, say, I can't buy this guy at this time because of X, Y, and Z, or I have to buy this guy at this time because of X, Y, and Z. And that's really where, more often than not, I see people lose.
Yeah.
And I'll chip in on that. Is I'll say probably the worst auctions that people have or that I've had are when you end up with all players that you expected to end up with. Because that means that lots of times you're overpaying or you're not adjusting to what's going on in order to get all those players. Usually my best auctions come from people who said, oh yeah, I never anticipated getting that guy, but he was there.
That's a good point.
Because that means you're waiting for the rest of the no one's predicting the future perfectly as far as all
right.
These things are going to break right and all these guys are going to be great bargains. And as a result, you got to be the one willing to say, when everyone else is expecting something, when something actually happens, be able to take advantage of it.
It's a little bit like turning your brain off, being like, all right, forget everything I know and just draft what comes to me. That's a solid point. You know, it's interesting, we had Steve Gardner on last week, Mike, and he talked a lot about how he wants to make his moves early. going back to sort of nomination strategy. And you know, that's one element of Auction Dynamics that I think was interesting, just to hear all the different approaches. Because I know you're someone who likes to typically wait a little bit. We've talked about it throughout our recaps so far this year. But briefly, go through that again, because I think that's an important thing to highlight again for everybody who may not be a regular listener with every single episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much I'm willing to wait. You know, it's more so the way I hear other people talk, and I've heard Steve talk about it, I heard Clay Link from RotoWire talk about it. I think a lot of people get into this mentality where they say, well, I want to buy a player early, or I want to buy a player in the second round, or by the time the first 30 players are off the board, I want to have at least one player. You know, and Lorne Michaels was the other way, where he said, you know, I want to wait. But for me, what it's more about, it's more, and I've said this before, I want to go where the value takes me. So the way I look at it is, you know, so CBS, for example, this year I did the NL, and I bought Max Scherzer with, like, I think the eighth player overall. And by the first few rounds, I didn't have a lot of money. I think I had around $100, and people were surprised because they're like, Mike, the last 2 years, you know, you sat back. You know, I thought you were a person who sits back. And it's like, well, I'm a person who sits back when that's suitable. Generally, in these expert auctions, I'm the person who sits back because I do feel like people overspend, albeit by a dollar or two per player, on most players early. And I know, you know, since it's a controlled, non-inflation 31-20, I know it's going to go, which is, well, you know, if everybody's spending by a dollar or two on a player, it doesn't seem like a lot. And I think this is where people get nervous, but it adds up. And by about the eighth or ninth round, you've got overspending by, even in a controlled expert auction, by about 60 or 70 bucks. You know, so what has to happen? Well, the money has to tilt the other way. It has to. You know, if you've added everything up to 31-20. Now, we know, you know, Jeff knows this better than anyone else. You know, we know the outcomes are not going to match what the expectations are. But based on how we've built our bids and our expectations, you know, we know that's going to happen. And it works the other way, too. You know, in an auction like CBS this year, where the prices were too, in my opinion, were too low early and I was pouncing, I kind of saw it in the middle. I saw two or three people just overspending on player after player, you know, because they had to. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm a little bit different than everywhere else, and where I think that's an advantage for me, is that there's so many people who kind of structure it like, well, you know, I have to spend here. I want to get a player by this round. I want to get a player by that round. And I just reject that.
We're running late on time here, guys, so I want to wrap up quickly with each one of you. If you could, give all of our listeners the biggest piece of advice that you do have. You know, if you're going into a draft coming up this weekend or an auction, I'll start with you, Jeff. What's the biggest thing you can do this weekend that'll help you win your league this year? Biggest piece of advice you have.
The biggest piece of advice I have is, do your analysis. Make sure if you're doing a thorough analysis ahead of time. I mean, if you're just kind of winging it, I don't really have much advice for you. But if you're doing your analysis ahead of time, trust that the person that created those values ahead of time was probably a better decision maker, more informed decision maker, than the person that is anxious or nervous or excited during an auction and feels the need to grab one of the first three players or a certain type of closer or to sit or some other thing that just makes all that complexity and all that anxiety feel more manageable. Trust yourself that you did as good a job as you could of analyzing beforehand, and stick to that so long as you know you're checking your assumptions throughout the draft. So you don't want to stick to something just to blindly stick to it, but that when a player gets thrown, when Bryce Harper gets thrown out and you have him at 38 because of inflation or whatever, that you had him at 38 for a good reason, and that the person that's sitting there on auction day probably doesn't know better than the person that was doing all the research 2 days before.
Hashtag trust the process. All right, Mike, for you.
Yeah, this kind of ties into this. The best advice I can give, it's like studying for a test. Don't spend too much time the last day, or optimally even the day before, overthinking, you know, to what Jeff's talking about, that process, whether it's your process or whether it's someone else's bid you're using. I've made this mistake before where, you know, the first time I did labor, which was way back in 2003 when I was kind of doing it as a fill-in, I got a little panicked and nervous, and I sat there and made a bunch of adjustments thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to ace this. And all it really did was just throw me off and put me into confusion. And I think it's something that's tempting to do, to overthink it. And at some point, you have to just put it to rest. And, you know, when you go into an auction or even a draft, you want to be relaxed. You want to be in a mindset, you know, now I'm not saying not to like make some adjustments if there's a last second injury or news. You know, of course, you should do that. But generally, you shouldn't sit there and say, well, you know, I'm going to move Ryan Zimmerman up $2. I'm going to move Yasiel Puig down $2 and do all this overthinking, because all that does is that just leaves you churning and puts you in a position where you're not relaxed and you're not comfortable. And that's what you really want. You know, as much work as this is, you want to be in a state of mind during that auction or draft where you're relaxed, where you're in the zone, and where you feel comfortable with what you're doing. And that's something I think people really forget. Like, people really get into this mode of like, I got to win, I got to do the best. But your mind does not work well when you're too amped up. It just doesn't.
It's like taking a test or like, you know, something like that. You can't cram it all in there at the last minute. So just try and, you know, get plenty of sleep the night before, have a clear head, clear your mind, be ready to go. That's about it. So, gentlemen, thank you so much. This was awesome. I had a lot of fun doing this. So thanks for sharing all of your wisdom. There's plenty of years of experience here, and I think we covered a lot of great stuff. So, all right, so let's wrap up the show. Thank you for listening, everybody. This has been episode 125 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. You can subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us. Jeff has the Quinton articles. He has one out pretty much every week, strategy-focused articles. They're great. You know, can't say enough good things about them. Mike has a lot going on. He just wrapped up a busy offseason filled with bid limits, rankings lists, and you name it, he's done it. So we're kind of transitioning over to our in-season mode here over the next few weeks. So we'll have a lot of great things coming, and the only way to get it is to subscribe. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service where you can bother Craig Goldstein. It's a lot of fun. I guarantee you that. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Jeff is at JJQ01. And I'm at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Every rating and review helps us out tremendously, so we appreciate the support. If you're drafting this weekend, good luck, everybody. For Mike and Jeff, this is George Bissell saying so long, everybody. Good luck.
Good luck, guys.